You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this special edition of the Green Street Hammers podcast. In this one, I'm going to have a proper deep dive into what makes West Ham's recruitment structure their structure, how it compares to some of the other clubs, and what we could do going forward to improve it. Now, I know that most of you are probably screaming at whatever you're listening to this on that we don't really have one, that the board have lost it all. And there's nothing we can really do to save it. But we're going to start right down the basics. What makes a good structure? Well, to be honest, that depends on the club. If you're someone like Real Madrid, you've got this big idea that you can sign pretty much anyone on the planet, and it doesn't really matter what kind of price tag that is. So, I mean, they have a huge waiting on to what's going to bring them revenue. So they like to bring in Brazilian players, where they're going to get a lot of new fan base, shirt sales and that kind of thing. I mean, you're starting to see Man United try and pick up these big players as well to bring in revenues after Ferguson left there, because they're not winning quite as much. So, I mean, the Pogba move monetarily, probably not the best thing in terms of the quality of player they're bringing in. It paid a lot, but the revenue he brings in just through media, the advertising is crazy. So, I mean, and they seem to be throwing a lot of money Jordan Sancho's way. He's going to be a world star in the future, and they need to try and make sure they have that kind of player. I mean, on other big clubs, Barcelona, they try and really emphasize a culture, a certain way of playing football through the entire club. That's come into a little bit of a harsh reality in the recent years, and especially now with the Messi saga. But you can expect them to go back to the way they were going, because it's worked for years and years, and that's the way that they do it. In terms of more comparable clubs, you've got people like Southampton. They really look at young players, British players they tend to focus on, but they're going for players that can really grow into the first team, or potentially if they reach their full potential, they have a huge resale value. And they are a traditional selling club, but they are still in the Premier League. They finished well above us last year, and they seem to be making a decent go of everything. I mean, the same for Leicester. Last few years, they've sold, I think it was, they paid 17.4 million for players, and they've sold them for over 200 million. And the last 3 years, they've got more points each year. So you can sell and still improve your club, as long as you reinvest correctly. And they seem to be bringing in players with real strong work ethics, capable of extending into the first team from the first season. I mean, you've got players like, or that we were in for, like James Maddison, who's really just slotted in there, and he's going to be worth far more when they sell him on than the price that they paid for him. And that's just club business for a club the size of Leicester. So for these clubs, the thing that really they have in common is they have a clear vision with a purpose, and that clear vision with purpose lasts for more than one season. So even if that transfer window doesn't go to plan, they can't quite pick up the players they want, it means that they stick with it. They know what they're doing in the next one, and they know that if they keep on doing what they're doing, it will be successful. And I just don't think that really happens at West Ham. I mean, these whole clubs are designed around it. They have this, the scouting, the coaching staff, the board, or the transfer negotiation people are all on the same page. And you have clubs trying to avoid manager chop and changes being integrated into that. So directors of football are becoming more and more popular. By doing that, you mean when you change the manager, the recruitment structure doesn't change. I mean, the manager might say, okay, I really want someone like this, but it's then up to the director of football to decide whether that's a priority or if that actually goes ahead. I mean, you've got different ways of doing it again. I mean, I think Everton said something in the last few years, they have over 300 scouts in the UK that report to them. I mean, not necessarily exclusively, but they have a lot of feet on the ground in these places where they can find out about new people. A lot of clubs now are tending towards video and data analysis because it's very available, it's far more effective, and if you trust three or four people, they can cover a lot of leagues and a lot of exceptional players, in theory, if they have all the data and all the video. And then they get either freelance scouts or they fly them out there to look at the certain players in matches that they think are going to be representative. So it's not like there's one right answer. And I mean, if we look at West Ham a bit more now, so historically we love the youth. I mean, we are a really an academy-focused club when we look at it historically. I mean, and that in itself requires a fairly large youth scouting network. We need to know where these players are coming from, the best ones from in the area, and if we can encourage them to start their careers with us. It also really helped that for a long period of time we had very stable managerial ranks. We didn't have much chop and change, and that meant if you were a youth player and you started at the club at 17, and if you were there for the next 5 years, you still had the same manager, or you only had one managerial change. If you were a youth club player that started under Slaven Bilic in the last 5-6 years, you've had three managers and one extra change. You've gone from Bilic to Moyes to Pellegrini to Moyes again. There's a lot of different things that come with that, and it's not particularly conducive to bringing youth players through. And since the new board came in, they've decided they're going to be a lot more involved. So this can be good or bad, but with the current board, that means they seem to be placing a lot more reliance on agents, general personal relationships, I mean, we've talked about, or we heard about in the lead up to this transfer window that we might be going for Benrahma because the Sullivans, the younger two, enjoyed getting drunk with Benrahma's agent in Malaga. I mean, that doesn't really seem like the best way to choose between a couple of different prospects. But either way, we did have a slight change when Pellegrini came in because he brought in Huzilios as director of football then, and it looked like they were going to be in charge or main focus at least. And I mean, in that first year, we thought he'd done quite well. But I mean, there's still some weird aspects because when they were in, both their sons were also in the scouting network. And are they the best players or best people for the job? Who knows? It's hard to see past the fact that they just seem to follow their fathers around for jobs. And that's not really what we're after if we're looking to progress as a football club in general. I mean, and when Pellegrini left, apparently we were left with only one scout, and we use a piece of software called Y-Scout, which is, again, is used by a lot of the top clubs, but it was a big change for us. I mean, if you consider what I was saying earlier about us being youth-focused with a lot of people on the ground in local areas, it's a big change, and the reasoning behind using stuff like this is, well, with permit laws for stuff like Argentina or outside of Europe, you can only bring in exceptional players. So you have to, there's no point knowing all of the players in Argentina if you can only bring in an exceptional one due to permit laws. And with Brexit coming up as a final thing, there's going to be some changes to that, and it's likely to become harder to, or more restrictions on the foreign players playing in the Premier League. But we have seen, again, another change where Moyes has come in. He's really wanted to be a bit more hands-on. He's done a bit more of the scouting himself with his team. And again, first transfer window in January, Bowen, Suchek and Randolph. Randolph was obviously a favourite West Ham, and we knew what he was about. But with Bowen and Suchek, they seem to be more of a fit. And I think that's really the key for going forward. But right now, we just seem so all over the place, and now we're being told that we need to sell to buy. How is that likely to really impact us? Are we going to be seeing another season where we don't really progress with any kind of vision? So what is it? What is West Ham's vision with the transfer window? I'm just going to take a short break, and after that we're going to go through that. We're going to look at a few previous seasons, and can we spot what the plan is?
For West Ham fans everywhere, this is the ultimate football app for you. For match highlights, interviews and the best West Ham videos and podcasts, download the free COY Irons app now from the App Store and Google Play.
Okay, and welcome back to the Green Street Hammers podcast. Now we're going to go through different seasons and their transfer impact on the squad. We're going to go back all the way, if you can cast your mind back this far, to Slaven Bilic's first season. Everything back then seemed quite hopeful. We had a Europa qualifying campaign ahead of us last season at the Bolin, and at the time a very potentially exciting move before we found out we'd been lied to. So if we go back to that point, we made some very key signings in that summer. We signed the likes of Payet, obviously, Lanzini, Ogbonna, also Antonio Obiang. These were designed to come in, impact the first team. And even if they weren't going to be first 11 names every week, so likes of Antonio Obiang, they were going to push the players in the first team. They were going to make it harder for them to just relax and think, no one's going to challenge me. These were good signings, right? Straight away, very good change signings for the first team. This seemed a very good window. I mean, on top of that, we also brought in the likes of Byram, Hendry during the season. These are younger players, potential to move up into the first team, we hoped. I mean, it didn't work out that way, but we could see what was going on. We bought them with the express purpose. They were young, they could improve, and they would either be resold at higher value or be part of the first team. And there were also loan moves. Moses was very useful throughout the season. I mean, Payet talked about him in very glowing terms. Less glowing about Emenike, but again, he was designed to come in and try and be a striker, because even during that final season, we struggled for a consistent striker. Sacco didn't score as many as the year before. Carroll was in and out because it's Carroll, and that kind of thing. It's a lot. All those moves were made with an express purpose, and we even ended up selling throughout the season Downing, Jarvis, Sarate, these players that were kind of on the edge of the squad, maybe a bit older, and it looked like the squad was moving in the right direction. That's great. You know, buy impactful first team players, young players coming in, selling those who are past their usefulness, really, for the side. Next year is when, again, we start to lose this idea of a vision, the idea that things actually have a plan about them. We tried to bulk out the squad, but without any real direction. So we thought a Europa campaign coming up. We thought, okay, we'll be able to focus on both because, you know, we'll get a bigger squad in, Payet there. But, you know, IU was brought in as a striker. He's not really a striker. I think we were kidding ourselves when we were told that he was going to be. He's a winger. Yeah, he's an inside forward, and he will get goals, but not as a solo striker up top. So we spent money there that wasn't really the most effective. And then we had to bring in Masuaku because Cresswell suffered a pretty serious injury in pre-season. But they're the only ones that I really felt like we spent money on to get in for the first team. Then you have players like Fernandez and Fletcher. They were youth potential. I think, again, I'm always going to be supportive of buying players that are young and can either grow into the first team or be moved on at a decent value. There's certainly no shame in buying players to think that they will get you more money back in future years or some usefulness. But then there were players like Arbelar, Figuli, Nordveit, all three moves to help bulk the squad. I think that we also got Gokantore in, like a loan deal for the time. It didn't seem as precise. We didn't feel like we'd gone out and gone, we need four or five players of genuine quality to improve the team, or even to go, these are the areas that we really need it. And we kind of gone, well, who's free? Who's available? Who does Bilic know? And we'll go from there. It was very, it just felt loose. It didn't feel as compact as the season before. And then, obviously, when Payet left, there was no plan. We didn't have someone to come in. The idea there that we hadn't considered Payet leaving was just ridiculous, because he had made noises about it before, the summer when he'd had a great international campaign with France. It's, you have to prepare for someone like that leaving, because even if you don't want him to, if he leaves, that is absolutely catastrophic to the squad, and there was no plan. And I think that for me is one of the clearest examples that there is no real vision or forward planning at West Ham. And we skip again to the next season, 17-18. We had Arnautovic came in. I think that we can all agree was a solid buy at the time. He came in, he was great scorer for us. Obviously, again, we had the unfortunate thing of him demanding to leave, because that's the kind of player he is. But again, we didn't seem to think about that when we bought him. We thought all issues would be solved. There are mixed feelings around like Chicharito. I think Hernandez is a very good finisher. He's a poacher. But he isn't the kind of player that we can really deal with in our system. During the modern game, we've kind of dealt with a single striker in order to try and keep the ball in midfield. He can't function that well in the system. His best moments for West Ham was when he's in the box, getting on the end of corners. He's a definite two-striker system. player. And again, that didn't seem to be the accountability there. The idea that we would actually play both of them together or up top, not with Arnautovic out left and Chicharito up top. We need to play two people up top if we really want Chicharito to be successful. In other moves that season, I mean, we got Hart in on loan. I mean, very good player in his time, but at that point he had been absolutely shot of confidence. And I don't think that was a great decision. And we sold a lot of players in, over the year. We sold Ayew, Sacco, Nordveit, Fletcher, Randolph, Fonte, Valencia, Fuguli. That's a lot of players that we've just suddenly decided aren't up to scratch. And that is both a reflection on our previous campaign's transfer and the way that we were thinking about players. We're thinking, okay, if they're not useful now, we'll just get rid of them. There was no, how can we make the squad useful? Or is there someone we can bring in that really connects the dots? There wasn't this, what have we got? How can we use it? It's a, oh, that didn't work. Off they go. There's no long-term plan. And then in January, we signed Jordan Hugill. And that's, I mean, I would feel really sorry for the guy because he was bought with this idea that we would be relegated and he would be useful in the championship. So he never got games for West Ham. He's potentially sold, or he was sent, potentially signed again because we knew his agent, or David Moyes' brother was connected to it. And it's, there's a lot of weird deals that go along with West Ham and it doesn't seem to fit. And so when we get round to Pellegrini, again, we see first season with a new manager and things really come along and seem to be done right. So we have some really good value buyers in this window. So we had Fabianski, Balbuena. Seemed like Fredericks and Perez were going to be very good as well. Fredericks has had mixed form. Perez never really gelled at the side. Again, a very good finisher, but was he the right type of striker? Hard. We had some big marquee purchases, Anderson, Yarmolenko, both pacey wingers. Yarmolenko is a bit of a stretch, like a bit of a stretch for that price because he had injuries and he's coming towards the sort of the decline of his career. But then, like, you had Diop, which was, I think, just a great buy. He's a very talented player, but also, I mean, we spent 20 odd million on him. But the season after, we were talking about him potentially being sold to United for 50 million. That's the kind of buy that you should be looking at. Someone that you can just go, bang, we're going to buy him. We think we can be a centre-back for us for years to come. But if we need to sell someone, he could be a huge value to resale. And that's just good business all around. We had some cheap gambles as well in that year with Wilshere and Sanchez. Again, didn't work out, but cheap. And, I mean, Wilshere's wages aren't cheap, but these are the kind of things that you have to try and gamble on if you want to try and progress the club. So I think for this season, again, was good. Had a good vision. And then we got around to 1920, the summer last year. Haller, for now, is, again, on the headlines. Haller, he scored like a goal every other game in Frankfurt and Utrecht. It's... we're looking at a player here that is a good striker in a two-striker system. So we've kind of gone on his stats and spent big money and then end up not playing him the right way. Is that a disconnect between the people making the transfer decisions and Pellegrini? I don't know. But then we have players like Fornals. Again, I think he could turn out to be an idea like Diop, someone who we're... buckets of potential. We got him at a time where he was starting to emerge himself as this potential linchpin in Spain's younger sides. It might have taken a bit of a stall over the year, but I think we can hope that he does retain that kind of potential value moving forward. I thought Alvaro Negetti was a good signing. He had good stats for Basel in European competitions. He's young. Again, someone who's probably quite good in a two-striker system. But it just didn't gel. I don't know why. Maybe if we'd had more time, a different manager, I don't know. But there were some seemingly good buys that have turned into poor decisions. The fact that we've sold Adjeti and Hugill at a loss is, I just think that's really poor management, as in business management. Also last year we signed Roberto Martin as free cover. I mean, Roberto's thankfully left, but we're still paying some of his wages. So that just seems a very poor decision all around. But we lost a lot of our squad. So like Chicharito, Arnautovic, Fernandez, Obiang, Perez, Oxford, Byram, Carroll, all left last year. That is a huge chunk of squad. And I think people underestimate how much getting rid of that kind of weight of player can do to a squad. And it doesn't seem that strange looking back at this year now that we struggled for togetherness at times. Like, I don't know how, I know Carroll was fairly chummy with all the West Ham guys. He's a character around the squad. And it's just, maybe we lost a few too many of these. But either way, that's done. And then obviously before the end of the year, Pellegrini was out. And in January, Moyes and his team targeted few players they needed to work out to get the squad back into shape. And they were Bowen, Suchek, and another goalkeeper in the form of Randolph. Now, I think this is the first time since maybe Bilic at the start of his reign that we went, okay, these are the areas we need, and we're going to go and get players that really fit our squad. Not just going to get good players, because I still think that Yarmolenko, Anderson, Allaire, we've just gone, cool, they're good players in those positions. We haven't gone, do they fit our squad? Suchek has taken to the squad like a duck to water, and Bowen really looks like he's working well with everyone at the front. And that is a huge bonus. When you can sign players that really fit the mould of you already have, or the mould you're looking to move towards, that's where you're going to make both money on your signings and good football decisions. Suchek is proper box-to-box. He gets on the end of crosses, and he helps Rice be a physical presence in the middle. So when you're looking at that kind of signing in January, you're wondering why on earth we're not doing it. Well, reportedly, Moyes took a lot into his own hands and with his team did a lot of the scouting personally. Now, if the manager is involved in the decisions, I think as long as it's done correctly, it's a massive boost, because then they're turning around going, I need this kind of player to fit into the system. And they're going and getting. So I think if we're going to look at this transfer window, what do we do next? Who is Moyes targeting? I worry about the lack of noise out of the club on a concrete target, rather than the, oh, we're interested in this player, we're interested in that player, and then they go to other clubs, and we don't hear any more about it, or we don't hear, okay, that's not too much of an issue because we're really focusing on this. This sell to buy mentality is worrying, and I genuinely am concerned about where the club's vision is taking us. So, after this short break, we're going to come back and think about what we could do to really correct West Ham for the future years. Hi, and welcome back to the final section of this special podcast. So we're going to be talking about what we could do this transfer window and how we can really focus going forward to get the club into a rhythm where we're not just buying players and hoping that that's going to be the thing that takes us to the next level, just on a whim. So for me, it's a real shame that we're in this sell to buy situation, because I can't see many other clubs struggling the way we are. I don't know if this is because of poor transfer decisions over previous windows where we're still paying for things, or we've overextended ourselves wage wise but it's tough when you see clubs like Leeds, who have just been promoted, making signings for 20 plus million, or you know, these are the kind of things that it shouldn't be tough for a club with a fan base such as ours and Premier League survival for the last... we haven't been relegated, so why should we be worrying about finances in that regard? I know, obviously, COVID's had an impact, but it should have an equal impact on most teams, and it doesn't seem to be the case. So, if we got a sell player, my gut feeling is still for Anderson to be sold. I think he's a good player. I'm not sure he was worth the money we paid for him, and I think the wages he's on is probably a bit too high for his ability. I also think we have enough cover to play in a variety of different ways if he were to leave and not be directly replaced. There's obviously Dean Garner's come back. We're going to have players around like Nathan Holland, I still think deserves a chance around the first team. Fornals played out there capably on the left, and I think that even if we weren't to replace him, we would be in a decent position. So he would be my player to go, and I don't know how much money that would leave us with, but I still think if we were to sell him, there are other areas we need to focus on. So I don't think anyone can turn around and tell me that our fullbacks are good enough for the Premier League, especially at left back. I saw a stat earlier that said Aaron Cresswell has had more touches in the final third than any other West Ham player, which, you know, you're going, okay, cool, nice attacking fullbacks there. But when you see he's got zero assists for the year, that's probably just showing that he's up there holding the ball for a bit too long and then doing absolutely nothing with it. And defensively, he leaves a lot to be desired. He's definitely lost pace over the last couple of years, and his willingness to tackle was completely and utterly shattered by that leg break in Slaven Bilic's second year. It's, again, things that happen, and I don't dislike him for the way it's happened because he certainly looked the part when he came up from Ipswich, but it's... That's the fact. We can't get that player back unless he's gone through some hypnotherapy over the summer. And that's just it. We need someone to either challenge him. I wouldn't be too hideously opposed to him being the understudy with Masuaku fighting for a left wing role. But I think there are a number of good value left backs to be had out there. I wrote an article earlier just before the window started. I would really love to see Max Clark. He currently plays in the Dutch First Division with Vitesse. He's English. He is genuinely a potential diamond in the rough, someone who could grow with the standard of football. I think he's got a very solid technique on that left side. And defensively, he does his job. He doesn't get caught out too often. And you certainly, if you were to watch some of his matches, you can see the positioning ability when compared to Cresswell, where we've had to watch him just be caught out by every single winger he's played against. It would certainly be a good punt for my money. And with Transfermarkt valuing him at under $1 million, it's... I don't see how we would be paying too much for him. I mean, one of my other options in that article I wrote was Anthony Robinson, who's joined Fulham for $2 million. But he has some injury issues, so I can see why there's potential worry there. Max Clark, no such issues. And I think he would very much jump at the chance to play back in the UK with in the Premier League. I don't see that that's a poor option. There are also other options. Calvin Verdonk, he is currently a free agent, used to play for Feyenoord, was out at FC 20 on loan last season. He's been linked with a move to, I think it's a Panathinaikos in Greece, just on a free. These are the kind of things that, if they're free players and, you know, they've had decent careers up to now, I don't see how that's a bad shot. These are kind of players that West Ham can take a chance on. hope that at the very least he gives us depth in that area. He's 23 years old, so he's not reached the peak of his career and declining. He's someone who could grow into the team or, as I said before, have that resale value, because we have still never sold a player for more than 25 million. And yet people still complain about us being a selling club. We're not a selling club. We hold on to players when we should sell, and we just end up drifting. We end up in this kind of limbo state where we never progress as a club because there's no plan to reinvest the money we get. So we don't want to sell. As I said, Leicester, each year they lose a key player. But for the last 3 years, they have been progressing because they've got plans. They've got players that they want to replace them with, and they have players that they want to get in to improve their squad. And that is the way that, given that we are not a financial juggernaut, the likes of the Champions League clubs are, that is the way we have to progress. We have to accept that some of these players are going to be leaving. But right now, can you honestly tell me that if we sold Declan Rice, the board or whoever is involved with our transfers has a plan to replace him or improve the squad? Because that's the reason I don't want to sell Declan Rice. I think Declan Rice's value is, this season or the end of the season, is probably about the peak that we're going to try and get for him. So if we had a plan, I'd say, okay, this guy wants to go on and be ambitious, fine, sell him at a very good price and bring players in. But we have no plan. We really don't. I mean, and if we're looking back at defensive strengthenings, we've been talking about getting Duffy in, but there's been no real movement. He wants to move to Celtic. I think someone like that would be great for us because he brings that experience, that leadership into the central areas. Again, something we've been missing. We've really just leaked goals because there's been no communication. We've kind of scrambled defensively at times. And I don't like the idea of always having to get these plug gaps. Like, you know, Duffy, again, is an older player. We're going to be picking him up as a, you know, not for a particularly long period of time going forward or all of that resale value. But he does a job and he's very good in the air. He will help us. I mean, he's likely to be able to help someone like Diop become the player that we want him to be. So there is that kind of change from just focusing on the younger players or technical players, which I'll get to in a second, but we need to have a clear idea that these aren't the be-all and end-all or the only thing we can do. So this transfer window for me is about ensuring that we don't struggle next year, struggle the same way, because you can struggle 2 years in a row, but if you end up making the same mistakes 2 years in a row, that's criminal at this level, and we will be found out for it. So moving forward, how can we take this club back to a way where we know what kind of thing is going to be happening each year? I think the board have to take a step back. The board have proven they are not football players. They are not football people. They are making decisions based on things that aren't good for the footballing side of the club or the business side of the club. They're kind of blending the both, and they're ending up in this nowhere zone that leaves us not competing with the teams we want to. We can't be making decisions based on agent connections and the like. We need a genuine plan. For me, that is young technical players. West Ham pride themselves on always having these players that are able to play on the ball. All these players with a real strong work ethic, players that are willing to give everything for the club, throw themselves around a bit, maybe end up doing some dirty work, but they are committed to the club. And that is the two things that we should really be looking to ensure that our players satisfy one of the two topics. You've got to be looking at young players because we need to be growing. Probably British players because of the Brexit rules. It just helps because if we were to get 4 or 5 young British players, if one of them reaches full potential and becomes like works their way into the England squad, suddenly they're going at crazy money. And then we can fund the rest of the team. You can grow on that kind of ideal and moving forward. You can't grow if you're buying players from all over the place, having to try and get them through visa stuff, which means that if they're getting the visa, the work permits, then they're already an exceptional player. So you're paying for these players on a premium because they're already exceptional. You're probably trying to bid against other top teams, and it's very hard to always encourage those players to join. So I would be looking at young, technical, hard-working players, unless you're really looking for a short-term plug, or unless a player with real star quality in an area we think is going to be, or we think is necessary for the club, and fits it, not just, oh, we're after a striker, he is a striker, we will buy him, real star quality, because it's silly to turn someone down who's 27, who comes available, who really fits the way we want to play, just because they don't fit that mold. But they have to be an exception. With any kind of vision and structure, there are going to be some odd years. So not every year you're going to be able to find the next Trevor Brooking. But if you focus on it, you give yourself a better chance of doing so. So I would increase our on-the-ground scouting network, especially in the UK. I think that you're getting a lot more players coming out of lower leagues at the moment that aren't being found or not necessarily realizing their potential in their teens, but maybe in their early 20s. So I'd like to see more of a focus on that area. And in foreign countries, not just relying on video, because there are always players that don't present necessarily the way that you want to in stats, or their team's struggling and they don't have that same attention-grabbing feature. So, like, obviously, it's easy to spot a pacey winger if he's knocking it past people and running around collecting, but less hard to always notice a resolute centre-back or someone who is just very good at controlling the game from that position. But if you have people on the ground watching matches in those leagues, or even talking to the players and officials at the clubs, you get a sense of who could be the next star. And if you get there ahead of people, that's when you either make a breakthrough or you make your money to help you make a breakthrough further on. Again, Payet was around. Everyone was aware of Dimitri Payet, but they weren't aware of how good he could be. Riyad Mahrez as well, not an unknown to a lot of top clubs by all reports, but when he joined Leicester in that system with Vardy, they unlocked him and they showed people how to do it. So these are the kind of players that, again, you can't do it every year, and I think that's an expectation that needs to be tempered. But what you can do is put it in place to make it more likely, to make it more of a plan to get these players rather than just luck when they fall in. And I think that under the current ownership structure at West Ham, we're going to be really struggling to do that. The board would like to be involved, and I think that the sooner they realise they're not playing Football Manager and they can just sign good players and put them in. I mean, to be honest, you can't even do that with Football Manager anymore. So they are behind the times. They are dragging the club to a point where it's very, very turgid and resistant to any kind of change. I think that we need to, well, hopefully they will be selling at the first opportunity once they can with the stadium deal. But they are really getting to a point where the transfer structure at West Ham needs a complete overhaul, not like a, you know, oh, we'll sign a new scout. It needs a complete rethink from top to bottom, and moving past the board involvement would be the clearest way of doing that. Now, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this in-depth discussion. If you want to talk to me on Twitter, I'm at ScottyJ24. And or if you want to contact the rest of the team at Green Street Hammers, do so. We're always happy to discuss these things. And if you want to suggest any more topics for deep dives on these kind of podcasts or the quickfire stuff we usually do, let us know. Always happy to talk with you guys. Thank you very much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.